I have a question for you. Are you a hypocrite? Have you ever been accused of being a hypocrite? Somebody ever looked at you and said, "You hypocrite." It's got a sting to it, doesn't it? Even just the idea of being called a hypocrite. It's an attack on your character to have somebody say, "You hypocrite." It says a lot of things about what that person thinks of you. But none of us want to think of ourselves as hypocrites. It's a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit painful. But really, it's a natural human tendency. Hypocrisy is something that is too easily ingrained in us and can easily be a part of who we are and how we act, how we think, how we behave. Hypocrisy is something that's easy for us to slip into. It's a tendency of our nature. In Luke 12, in verse 1, Jesus warns, he says, "Beware of the leavening of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy." He had to put a warning out there to say, be on guard against this, look out for this, because this is something that you have to be cautious of. He wouldn't need to warn us of it if it was just easy to avoid. You know, don't worry about this because, yeah, you'll see it over there, but you know, you're in no danger of becoming like that. He said, beware of it. Be cautious of it. And he actually gives a lot of instruction to us, to his disciples, about hypocrisy. So we have to recognize right off the bat, all right, this is, maybe I'm not a hypocrite, but this is something that I could easily be. So why is he telling me beware? Why is he telling me be careful? Why is he saying be on guard against this? What is it about me that tends toward that? Today I'd sort of just like to go through this topic of hypocrisy and to acknowledge that we are by nature hypocritical. We have this tendency to be hypocritical, but with care, with great care and through God's Spirit, we can overcome it. And we can put hypocrisy aside and behind us. You've probably heard hypocrisy defined this way. And I will just read from an article that sort of outlines the source of the term hypocrisy or hypocrite. This is from an article by Mr. Robert Dick in the Good News from 2002, the March-April edition. An article called "Beware the Leaven of the Pharisees." Hypocrite comes from the Greek word hypokritis. H-U-P-O-K-R-I-T-E-S. And I'm sure I mispronounced that. But you see the origin. It comes from the Greek word hypokritis and refers to someone who is acting, pretending. It was the custom of Greek and Roman stage actors to speak in large masks with mechanical devices for augmenting the force of the voice. Sort of precursors to our microphones. These actors, concealing their real faces and changing their real voices, were called hypocrites, hypocrites. So it was a term describing the actors, not attributing anything to their character necessarily, just describing the actors and who they were and their role. The term eventually came to mean somebody that wears a mask, that puts on this false front to be something else. So this is our working definition of hypocrite. This is the term and the concept that we're going to work around today. Now, when I first read that, my personal reaction was really, I am who I am. I don't put on these masks. I don't pretend to be somebody else. That's not really me. And I think that's sort of our natural human tendency. We don't want to be hypocrites. That's horrible. But when you look deeper and you sort of consider situations that you might find yourself in or ways that you might not necessarily act, but tendencies that we might have towards certain behaviors and certain actions, we can see that we do have this tendency toward hypocrisy. And so today we'll look at several scenarios, specific scenarios and extract from those the ways that we might fall into this type of hypocrisy. We're going to look at three different types of hypocrisy, three different flavors of hypocrisy, if you will. Expositor's Bible Commentary puts it this way. In older Greek, Hippocritus, again, was an actor by the first century. But by the first century, the term came to be used for those who play roles and see the world as their stage. There are different kinds of hypocrisy. In one, the hypocrite feigns goodness, but is actually evil and knows he is being deceptive. In another, the hypocrite is carried away by his own acting and deceives himself. A third kind of hypocrite deceives himself into thinking he is acting for the best interests of God and man, and also deceives onlookers. So we're going to examine the three biblical examples of, not the three, but three biblical examples of these different types of hypocrisy. The first one I'll call the con man. The con man. This is the hypocrite that feigns goodness, but is actually evil and knows he is being deceptive. This one is probably the one we can identify right off the bat as really just malicious and evil. Let's turn over to Matthew 22. Matthew 22 and verse 15. Then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him, being Jesus Christ, in his talk. And they sent to him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God and truth, nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites?" We know how the story goes on. Jesus asked for a coin and says the famous, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." But the point here is that Jesus calls them out as hypocrites, uses this term to describe them. "Why do you come at me like this, you hypocrites?" It was very evident to him that they were coming to him in this very false front. They were coming to him with flattery. They were coming to him and telling him, "Oh, we know you're so good, and we have such respect for you. Answer us this." And obviously, behind that false front, behind the flattery, it tells us plainly, they were trying to entangle him in his talk. They were trying to trap him. They were trying to find some way to get him in trouble so that they could take him and make an accusation before the court of their day and have him put to death. It was a false front. It was the mask that they were wearing. And he calls them very, very plainly, "Hypocrites, why do you test me, you hypocrites?" There's a basic formula for this type of hypocrite, this con man. It's, "I want something, you have it, and I'm going to con it out of you. I'm going to get it from you in some sort of dishonest way." The Pharisees felt they had the truth and the right way of doing things, and they wanted, out of Jesus Christ, some way to trap him in his words. They want to trap him. They want to get him to say something. "We're going to get you to say something that we can take before the court, and we're going to trick you into it." Right? Very insidious, very malicious. We see this kind of thing on TV. Right? You see it in society around you. "I want to sleep with you, because you're a beautiful woman, and so you must consent, so I'm going to charm you and convince you I'm much better than I actually am." Right? It's that con man kind of thing. Or, "I want money, and you have it, so I'm going to sell you something that's maybe overvalued or maybe doesn't exist, and I'm going to get you to pay for it." Right? That's a traditional con. And this can be done to very varying degrees. Where I think it really comes into our lives is on a little bit of a less overt level, but But still, it's the same principle. I want information. I want to know something. And you know it, but I don't. So I'm going to dance around the topic until you tell me what I want to know. So I'm going to sort of con you out of this information. I'm not going to be upfront with you and tell you, oh, I really want to know how much money you make or whatever it is, right? I want to know who told you this or what did that person tell you? I want to know what that person told you. But I'm not going to come out and just ask that. We're going to talk, and I'm going to try to get you to go with me in this conversation until you spill it. And then I'll know, and then I can take that information away and do whatever I want with it. We play these games a little bit sometimes. Maybe not even for real malicious things. Maybe it's a trivial item and you just want to know some information. But instead of asking directly what this information is, we kind of play around and dance around it until we get somebody to spill it. And we do this in other areas as well. It's just a tendency that we have to maybe not necessarily want to give away our motives. And so in not giving away our motives, we deceive other people into what our motives actually are. So this person, the con man, is the person that masks malice with friendship. Puts on this face of friendship, of pleasantness, but really is trying to do something malicious on one level or another. This is the person that deceives others, but not themselves. They deceive others, but not themselves. The second type is the person that we will call the rock star. This is the rock star. In Expositors, it outlined this type of hypocrisy by saying that this is the hypocrite that is carried away by his own acting and deceives himself. Let's turn over to Matthew 7. Matthew 7 and verse 3. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. It's a story that we're very familiar with, a concept that we're very familiar with. But Jesus comes out and says, this is hypocrisy. This person doing this is a hypocrite. Now, this is different from the malicious con man type of approach. This person apparently genuinely wants to help another person. They've got this speck in their eye. They've got some small issue. Oh, I genuinely want to help this person. That's good. But the problem is that this person is unaware of their own personal problems. They've deceived themselves about who they are. They don't understand properly. They don't have a good sense of who and what they are. And so they're going out trying to help other people, but they're really delusional. They have a delusional self-perception. Expositors continues and says, such pious hypocrites, though unaware of their own deceit, do not fool most onlookers. Right? And so it is with the person here. The person with the beam sticking out of their own eye is not going to fool anybody that looks at them and says, you are trying to help him? You're kidding. Right? It's the person that is deceiving themselves. Now, occasionally, this kind of person will deceive others. It's not out of the question, but usually this person doesn't deceive anybody else. The basic formula for this type of hypocrite is self-promotion without self-awareness. Right? It's the person saying, I will help you get that speck out of your eye without any awareness of themselves individually. We see this in several spheres. You might have somebody say, oh, surely maybe not say this directly, but here's the attitude. Surely you've heard of me. Let me teach you something. It's name recognition, right? You see celebrities get on TV and promote their political agendas. Why? Right? Often you see a celebrity get on TV and promote this political idea. And you say, well, what are this person's qualifications? Fame? Fame. It's about it, fame. But because there's name recognition, they can get out there and push their ideas and say, let me tell you how it is. Let me tell you what's right. We see this also we've seen this historically within the church. You'll have somebody who has a certain level of notoriety and they become self-inflated and they take a whole bunch of people off with them when they follow their own erroneous doctrines. They go some way, right? They are unaware of their own personal problems, but because of their notoriety, because they've been built up so highly for whatever reason, now they take off and they take a bunch of people with them, right? And they have all these other issues, but they're relying on notoriety over godly inspiration. We see this in the kind of teachers that will come to you and essentially say, I have a pet doctrine and you need to join my church so I can teach you to be a real Christian. So there's this pet doctrine. There's this core thing that they feel they've really got nailed down, right? It's some tangential thing, a sacred names or Passover observance or whatever it is, right? I've got this issue down. I don't know, you come to my church, I'm going to teach you about this issue. You don't have to worry about loving neighbors and loving God. I don't really know about that stuff, but I will teach you this issue right here. And, you need to come be a Christian in my church to do that. Again, there's this beam, right? There's this beam in their eye. They're missing maybe a large chunk of the, doctrinal spectrum. And even let's say if they were right on this small issue, and you have this speck in your eye of some small tangential issue that maybe you don't see quite correctly, you have somebody else that maybe sees that issue correctly but has the entire other spectrum of things off basis, and they're going to come and say, oh, let me help you with that. That's just imbalanced, right? But for us, hopefully none of us are doing that. It's just something to sort of look out for and be on guard against. Where this really comes down to our level is when we start comparing ourselves amongst ourselves. This falls into that same kind of hypocrisy, right? Self-promotion without self-awareness. So we can look at somebody else and say, oh, well, relative to that person and that person and that person, I am a really solid Christian. I'm doing a really good job because look at what they're doing. Look at what they're doing on the Sabbath. Look at what they're, wow. I would never be like that person. So you get into the same mentality of not seeing the beams in your own eye, not seeing the issues that you might have, having a false sense of self-awareness, but comparing yourself to other people and elevating yourself and saying, look at the speck in that guy and that guy and that guy and that guy. I don't have those issues. And so I'm okay, right? It's something that if we're not careful about it, that we can easily do. You know, you hear about something that somebody went through or something that somebody did, a mistake that somebody made, and a reaction might be, wow, I would never do that. I'm so much better than that. Right? And hopefully it's not. Hopefully we'd be praying for the person. But again, not in a self-righteous kind of way, not in an elevating kind of way over that person, because again, that's hypocrisy. It's putting on a mask of saying, I'm good, and because of these issues that somebody else has, which doesn't impact how good or bad you are at all. It's just putting on a mask, and so it's hypocrisy. This person, the rock star, as we're calling it, this person masks inadequacies with talent, with knowledge, with skill, with recognition, with relative goodness. This person deceives himself and not other people. They deceive themselves and not others. So the con man type approach deceives others, but not themselves. They know they're tricking people. The rock star deceives himself, but usually not other people. The third type of hypocrisy we'll call the zealot. The zealot. In this type, the hypocrite deceives himself into thinking that he is acting for the best interests of God and man, and also deceives onlookers. Read that again. The hypocrite deceives himself into thinking he is acting for the best interests of God and man, and also deceives onlookers. Let's turn over to Acts 8. Look at a very famous hypocrite. Acts chapter 8 and verse 1. This is following the death of Stephen. It says, "Now Saul was consenting to his death. And at that time a great persecution arose against the church which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except the apostles." Verse 3, "As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering every house and dragging off men and women, committing them to prison." And we see even with Stephen having them killed. Let's turn over and sort of read the rest of the story. Acts 26 and verse 9, Paul tells us he wasn't doing this out of malice in the way that the con man acts out of malice. He was doing pretty horrible things, but he wasn't doing it in the same way that the con man did it. Acts 26 and verse 9, Paul explains of himself. He says, "Indeed, I myself thought I must do many things contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth. This I also did in Jerusalem, and many of the saints I shut up in prison, having received authority from the chief priests. And when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. And I punished them often in every synagogue and compelled them to blaspheme. And being exceedingly enraged against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities." He was convinced that he was doing the right thing. He wasn't acting out of malice, knowing purely that he was being evil and persecuting good people. He was acting thinking he was doing God's will. He was acting on God's behalf and having these heretics, these Christians, put to death because they didn't deserve to live. He was a zealot. Now, this form of hypocrisy is probably the most difficult because it involves self-deceit. And it deceives others. You can deceive yourself into believing you are acting on God's behalf, and you can make a pretty compelling case that you're acting on God's behalf and convince others to join in with you. This is what the Pharisees did, and this is what Paul was part of, right? Paul could, I'm sure, teach and tell why these Christians are evil and why they need to be put to death and make converts, make more people who are going to follow in the deception and go out and kill Christians. This sort of hypocrisy, and we'll get into why this is really hypocritical, but this sort of hypocrisy is just insidious. It's a disease. It spreads. The basic formula for this is self-promotion in the name of righteousness. It might not even be thought of as self-promotion, but it's self-promotion ultimately in the name of righteousness. We see the example of the Pharisees. The Pharisees did this not just in this realm, but in all of their teaching. They would teach, and we'll see a little more on that. But the Pharisees would teach that here's this way, here's the right way. And this is what you need to do, and this is who you need to be, and we are good, and others are not. When in reality, they weren't teaching the whole truth. They weren't teaching righteousness. They were actually taking people away from righteousness. And Jesus Christ condemned them for that. You see this type of hypocrisy anytime, usually there's a church split, right? Anytime we've had divisions in the past, it's usually been personality based in the guise of godliness. So it's an individual that is acting on God's behalf and convinces a lot of other people that he's acting on God's behalf, and suddenly a whole group of people disappear. Now, we fall into this form of hypocrisy when, for example, we say, well, I have information that I think you need to be aware of for your spiritual health, and I'm going to spread it. Even though I know this information might be polarizing and might be divisive and might be whatever, I'm going to take this information and I'm going to spread it as though this is depending, your spiritual health and your salvation are depending on this issue. So here goes, I'm going to unleash this and I'm going to put this out there. I have information that you need to know. This is sort of how heresies start. But it's hypocritical, and we'll get into Jesus' teaching on this. But this person, the zealot, basically unknowingly masks evil with righteousness, deceiving themselves and others. So they deceive both. They deceive themselves, they deceive others into following. Jesus taught often about religious hypocrisy. And there's a fairly long passage in Matthew 6 in which he addresses that. Let's turn over to Matthew 6. Be very familiar with it. And we're very familiar with the things, the concepts taught here. We usually read them individually, and we learn much from them that way, and that's good. That's not wrong. The context here is teaching against hypocrisy. Jesus Christ is teaching, he's contrasting the way that we need to be with the way that the religious people of his time, who he calls hypocrites, were behaving. And he lays it out for us. Matthew 6, verse 1, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise you have no reward from your Father in heaven." Verse 5, "And when you pray, you should not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets." Verse 16, "Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear to men to be fasting." He's going through some of the religious practices of their day and saying, these things are hypocritical. These are people pretending. They're pretending to be righteous, but they're wearing this mask, and underneath there's nothing. It's emptiness. In verse 1, he says, take heed. To take heed there means be careful. Be very careful. Be careful not to be like the hypocrites. Again, he's encouraging us to be careful because it's a tendency. It's something we tend to get caught up in. It's something that would be easy given our nature, knowing that we like when we get promoted. We like self-promotion. That makes us feel good. And this, he even guarantees pretty much. He says, if you do this hypocritically, you'll get praise. You'll get self-promotion. You'll have that gratification. People will look at you and think you're pious and think you're religious. But he says that's all you're going to get. But he says it does work. If you go about religion in this way, in a hypocritical way, putting on a mask and pretending to act a certain way, it will work, and it will convince other people that you are religious, and you will have a sense of gratification about how you behave, about how you live your life. You'll get all sorts of positive feedback that, oh yeah, you really are a great person and very spiritual person. And that'll be gratifying, and then you can continue in that. It's again, it's a cycle. You're tricking other people into thinking that you're spiritual, And they're giving you positive reinforcement that, oh, you are spiritual. And so you can continue in this way. It's a very, again, insidious form of hypocrisy. So in here, he's encouraging us to examine, why are we doing this thing? Right? This good thing that you might have an opportunity to do. Some form of service. Some form of contribution to someone else. Some way to do something that is good, that has some level of visibility to it. What are your motives behind that? Are you doing that for recognition? Am I doing that for recognition? Is it something that I'm doing in order to receive praise from men? Because if that's our motivation, we'll have that recognition and that praise, but God won't respect it. He won't honor it. We can ask ourselves, is there something in this for me? If I do this good thing, he's talking here, especially in verses 1 through 4. He said, therefore, verse 2, let's go to 6:2. Matthew 6:2. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory for men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. So when we go to do a charitable deed, this specifically was associated with almsgiving, with going and giving money, contributing money to people, and this was done publicly in his day. We don't see a lot of that now, but again, the concept applies. I have an opportunity to do something good and positive for someone, and we should look for these opportunities. I'm not at all discouraging us from doing good and positive things for other people. But when we do those good and positive things for people, when we have those opportunities, what are our motives behind those things? Why are we doing those things? Is there something in it for me? That's another examination question we can ask ourselves. Is there something in it for me if I'm doing this? And if there is that what I'm after? We would sure hope not. But Jesus gives us a test. He said, here's a test. Here's a way to find out if your motives are good. Do it secretly so that nobody knows. If you can, again, you want to do this. So if it's impossible to do whatever it is you're going to do in complete secrecy, which often it is, do this thing secretly as possible, with as few people as knowing as possible. Are you still driven by the right and proper things? Or are you driven by the respect, glory, honor you might receive even from those few people? Right? He gives us a test in this. He says, find a way to do this in secret. Find a way to do the things that you should be doing. He goes on praying, fasting, right? Find a way to do these things privately without anyone seeing, to ensure that you're not acting in hypocrisy. He gives us a way to examine and to eliminate it. Continuing Mr. Robert Dick's article, he simply says, Christ's message to his disciples was simply, if you do it this way, men's admiration will be your total reward, since I will not be looking or listening. Again, speaking about acting hypocritically. If you do it that way, if you act in hypocrisy, men's admiration is your full and complete reward, because God doesn't pay attention to that when we do it. We can be doing something good and right. You'll think of Paul saying, if I give my body to be burned, but I don't have love, if I'm doing it in a wrong attitude, it doesn't profit anything. Let's turn over to Mark 7. Again, Jesus continuing, this is also his teaching against religious hypocrisy. Mark 7 and verse 5. Then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? This sounds a little bit ridiculous to us. What? That's so irrelevant from a religious kind of level that to us it just, we don't quite get the full meaning of it, I don't think. But they're essentially coming and saying, look, this is something we do. This is how it's done in the church. This is what the Pharisees are coming and saying. This is how it's done in the church. And your disciples don't do that. Why? That's a problem. This is how we do things here. Why don't yours do it this way? And he answered and said to them, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandments of God, you hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups and many other such things you do. He said to them, all too well you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your tradition. The Pharisees claimed a superior level of righteousness, but they replaced true righteousness or overrode true righteousness with some of their traditions. And Jesus says, this is hypocrisy. You can't hold to part of the law and then elevate your traditions above what God has taught and claim to be righteous teachers. It's hypocrisy. You're putting on a mask. They were putting on this mask of saying, we are teachers and we are righteous and we are the examples that you should be looking to, but we don't teach the whole law, right? Because we have this set of things over here that we like better, and we're putting that on top of God's law, and that's more important. And Jesus says that's hypocrisy. You're pretending to be righteous, but you're actually overriding righteousness with something that is meaningless. And so he scolded them heavily for that. The problem is not simply just error. It's elevating maybe a truth. It's taking a truth and expanding it or embellishing it and saying this truth is more important than any other truth. And we've seen this historically. 1995, essentially what happened was people said love toward Jesus is more important than obeying him. Love toward Jesus isn't wrong, right? We love God. We are to love God. We love our elder brother. We love God the Father. That's good. But we don't do that at the expense of obeying them. We don't say this truth is so important that I'm going to forget about that truth. That one's gone. We've seen prophecy elevated at the expense of loving your neighbor. Well, it's so important to understand prophecy that you don't have to love people anymore. Right? It doesn't work. It just doesn't gel that way. These things are hypocrisy because they wear the mask of complete righteousness. They say, this is complete righteousness. This is good. But they omit major elements of righteousness. Mark 7, verse 9, continuing, he says, all too well you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your tradition, that you may keep whatever it is that you're elevating. Do we personally ever do this? Right? Do we personally say, well, this command, I'm going to override it with this here thing because I like that better. Here's a ridiculous example. My boss makes it so hard to keep the Sabbath that I think I'm going to kill him. Well, Sabbath keeping is important, right? But not at the expense of murder. So you can't just say, well, this one's really important. Sabbath keeping is more important than murder. So yeah, let's do Sabbath keeping and forget about murder. Well, or how about this? I love this person so much that I just don't want to see them get into trouble. So even though they made this mistake, I'm going to lie about it and cover it up. Right? You can't say, well, love is more important than truth-telling, so I will go out of my way to lie because I think love is... Obviously, that's not even love, right? But again, the thinking can go that way. So you see that sort of empirical selfishness, right? Killing your boss so that you can keep the Sabbath is personal selfishness. Lying to cover up somebody else because you love them so much, it's sort of empirical selfishness. It's my empire, it's my people, it's my family. I love them. I'll go to court and testify that he didn't do anything when in reality he did. Right? It's empirical selfishness. Or how about this one? This issue is really important. And even though it's pretty polarizing, it needs to be discussed. So I'm going to bring it in and we're going to discuss this and we're going to polarize everybody and, you know, separate people into two camps over this one issue because this issue is really important to me. Right? It's partisan selfishness. My party, my set of beliefs, right? My sect. This is my thing and this is really important. And so out of selfishness for me and my party, we're going to push this and this is my idea. Right? It's laying aside one commandment to promote unity and love for the sake of whatever it is, other commandment, tradition, issue you feel is more important. Right? These things should coexist. You should be able to keep the Sabbath without killing your boss. You should be able to love someone and tell the truth if they've made a mistake. You should be able to feel very strongly about an issue while maintaining the unity of the body. There's all these things that they need to coexist. And if they can't coexist, then there's a problem. We can overcome hypocrisy, though. Consider the characteristics. Two big characteristics of hypocrisy. One is that it's always pretending. Hypocrisy is always pretending. It's always putting on a mask, pretending to be something that it's not. We counter that with honesty. Just plain and simple honesty. Honesty with others, but especially honesty with yourself. It's good to be honest with yourself about who you are and why you feel a certain way and what your motives are. It's good to be honest. You can look up Luke 18:13 in relation to that. Second characteristic of hypocrisy. It's always driven by selfishness. Hypocrisy is always self-motivated. It's never others motivated. Ultimately, it's always self-motivated. It's selfish in some form. The solution there is humility, sacrifice, things that don't promote self. You need to be wary of situations that benefit me, promote me, and be able to act in secret again, going back to what Jesus commanded us. Do these things in secret. Give in secret. Pray in secret. Fast in secret. Right? You don't have any risk of self-promotion if you're doing these things in secret. We also need to consider the impact of our actions carefully. How is this going to impact other people? Right? Is this going to hurt and destroy and tear apart, or is this going to build up and encourage? We need to be considering how it's going to impact others, not how it's going to impact self. Counteract the selfishness that drives hypocrisy. Conclusion, I'd like to read again from Expositor's Bible Commentary. This is commenting on Matthew 6. It says simply, to attempt to live in accord with righteousness, but out of motives eager for men's applause, or I might add any impure motive, is to prostitute that righteousness. To take something that's meaningful and good and valuable and to use it for a cheap and meaningless purpose. For this, it says, there will be no reward. That should make us be very careful in terms of how we go about practicing our religion. Let's turn over in closing to Romans 12. Romans 12 and verse 9. It simply says, let love be without hypocrisy. Let who we are and what we're supposed to be, love toward God, love toward neighbor, let that love be without hypocrisy. Let's put it behind us. Let's be honest. Let's be humble. Let's be sacrificing. Let's not be pretending and putting on something that we aren't. Let's be honest with ourselves. Let's be honest with each other. And we can avoid this trap of hypocrisy. And we can be pleasing to God and moving toward His kingdom.